George one-on-one up top against Hayward. Penetrating the arc. Rises up and buries it from the top of the circle.
Hello, welcome back. This is another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter. With us, joining us out in Boston, Pacers TV host and sideline reporter Jeremiah Johnson. The Pacers will play the Celtics coming up on Wednesday night. We'll get to that in a moment. Let's start with the most recent news. Indiana victorious over Utah. A really solid team out west. The second time we've seen the Jazz. They come with so many storylines. A ton of indie kids. George Hill making his return. Of course, good to get a win at home against a good team coming off a loss. What of all of that stuck out to you?
First thing I want to say is I'm glad you said the recent news was the Pacers-Jazz game and not the long national nightmare or international nightmare of Tom Brady's missing Super Bowl jersey, because it's the main story on ESPN, and I cannot wait to go outside in Boston and just celebrate in the streets, because I have been losing sleep over the fact that Tom Brady's Super Bowl jersey was missing, and now law enforcement officials have tracked down the culprit, and he had two Super Bowl jerseys, so it's a perfect time to be in Boston for this national story just prior to Pacers-Celtics.
Yeah, I didn't even put two and two together until you mentioned it, that you're there in Boston. I was just watching the video, in fact, of the guy who stole it. I don't know what makes him think he can get away with that. It's 2017. There's a camera everywhere. Yeah. There's probably a camera shooting you and me doing this podcast right now.
Well, there's going to be a Fox Sports Indiana camera at the post office tomorrow, and if that thing gets shipped in, we're going to have it on Pacers Live pregame. At least if Ken Softman, our Patriots fan producer, has anything to say about it. But yes, back to the important matter and the matter that most people who download and listen to this podcast, by the way, thanks to all of you for downloading and listening, and we appreciate the comments throughout. Pacers Jazz, I guess from a team that I've been unable to predict or really have a good feel of what's going to happen, I kind of had a good feeling heading into that Jazz game simply because it was an every other game. The team has been rotating wins and losses, and it was a home game, so it seemed like the perfect situation and scenario, at least from what we've seen over the last few weeks. I was a little concerned because Utah lost that game to Chicago, and really on Saturday maybe felt like it was a game they should have won. They'd lost two straight. They had a day off. They had the Indiana contingent hoping to play well in front of friends and family. And really, for the most part, though, the Indiana contingent that had an impact on the game were George Hill and Gordon Hayward. Trey Lyles had a little bit of playing time, I think 3 minutes in the first half, and he'd been having some DNPs lately as well. So it was really those two guys, and Gordon had a great game. I mean, I was just marveling at what he was able to accomplish, especially through three quarters. And George Hill was not as effective as he was in Salt Lake City. And I think that was a big part of the game, because if you look at the box score and you see he was 0 for 7 from 3, if he makes 3 of those, this could have been a different game. But I think the Pacers responded, as we have seen them do so often this season. Everyone listening to this podcast understands that consistency has been an issue, and they've been unable to really, except for a couple different stretches in January and February, they've been unable to sustain any success. So I think it'll be the challenge, and you know, I think 70 games in, it's a little bit naive to think that they all of a sudden will go on a long win streak or they will figure out how to deal with success. I think it may be win one, lose one, win a couple, maybe lose one the rest of the way out. And you hope in the playoffs maybe you can win some 6 or 7-game series, I think. But I think it was a great all-around performance. It was one of those games where, unlike the win the game started to run together. The win last week against Charlotte, where Paul George was the star, this was a team effort, and the Pacers won despite Paul not having, you know, a great offensive game, at least in the field goal percentage column. But he was passing early on. He was finding his teammates. And, you know, I always think that I remember Larry Bird in one of his interviews at some point, I think this season, he said, it's amazing how good we are when C.J. Miles is good. When CJ plays well, we play well, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but once he started to knock down a couple of those shots and then CJ was the one playing great defense, I think it was a good sign for that game.
It was interesting to me because at least locally here, the storyline you have at halftime, Hayward has 20 and Paul George has 2 points. George opens 0 for 9. Hayward was winning the battle and from an individual matchup won the battle on the night. But after George starts 0 for 9 from the floor, he finishes 6 for 11, hits a couple big shots down the stretch, hits the one that essentially clinches it, and then a couple of free throws with the cherry on top. And thanks in large part to the Fox Sports Indiana crew. And I'll give a shout out to my guy Jason, who runs one of the cameras under the basket and then goes into the locker room with me for most games. He was the one with the close-up shot that that you guys took to of Paul in that extremely emotional moment that then turned into its own storyline, where it looks like he's saying, "This is my city." But you could tell that moment was so important to him because he knows Gordon Hayward's from here. He knows he's a favorite. Now, you know, the crowd cheered for Gordon in the pregames. They weren't cheering for him when he was scoring by any stretch of the imagination. Paul George was the guy that the crowd wanted to do well in that game. But you kind of saw a stretch of emotion there from Paul in a pretty big moment that you don't always see.
Yeah, it was awesome. And from my vantage point, I really did not see it. And it was one of those things that I think you started to check Twitter and you kind of saw what people were saying. And then we were able to replay a little bit of it. And you could definitely read the lips on Pacers Live postgame when we re-aired it. So I didn't really grasp what had happened when it happened. That's one of the unfortunate things based on, you know, you and I both at that point in the game were sometimes setting up who the walk-off interview would be if the Pacers win and kind of figuring out maybe some key stats or, you know, some angles for those questions and for, you know, for me as well, the start to the postgame show. So when the shot went in, I immediately kind of looked at the stats and didn't really observe what had happened. I thought it was interesting as you were in the locker room when I believe it was Mark Monteith who asked Paul about what he said. Yes. And he said, "Well, I think there's video of it." And you know, back to the Gordon Hayward situation, I think was it in Boston when actually where we're at right now, Jay Crowder was upset with the Celtics fans for cheering for Gordon Hayward, correct?
Yeah, that I believe that was the scenario.
This was not a case at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, I did not think, and correct me if you had a different feeling about it. Gordon Hayward was having a fantastic game, and of the 15,458 in the building, I'm sure many are fans and respect Gordon Hayward, but I did not feel like as he was having that game that it was kind of like some of those LeBron games when he would have a big shot or Kobe and the place would go nuts for him. Fans were not really cheering for Gordon Hayward, and I didn't really notice a great amount of trash talk maybe back and forth between Gordon and Paul. It looked like it was two competitors going out there and playing, so I would even say that's what made Paul's reaction even better because it was genuine. It was maybe not even instigated. It was just natural because he knew Gordon had a big game, but hey, don't forget, buddy, this is my city. And I would caution to be a little careful to read too much into those. You'd love to hear Paul say that, and I think that he certainly embraces the home crowd. And who knows what's going to happen in the next however many years. But for that moment, it was the most important thing for this team was to win that game, to go back to two games over 500, for Paul to, you know, have the big shot. As we've seen really a lot of times this season, he's been good in those clutch situations. Maybe up until late last season, he had not been. So that was the second, I think, important thing. And then for him to, you know, show a little love back to the fans and remind everyone, yeah, this is my city. And for us to capture that, I think it, all in all, was a great night at the Fieldhouse.
Oh, I think you were dead on with all that. And to close on that whole thing, you know, to me, the big difference between what was happening in Boston and what was happening, Gordon and George Hill both got nice reactions from the crowd when they were introduced. But I don't ever remember hearing outside of maybe a smattering of claps when Hayward was scoring 38 points. You know, there certainly, that's no diss to say there aren't Butler fans here, but there were more cheers when during the game, at least, when Tyler Ulis was scoring, when Phoenix was here because of all the Kentucky contingent. Now, the Butler fans are Pacers fans, too, and I think it was a respect thing before the game. You know, he's a local guy. He did a lot here locally. Fans here appreciate that, but once the game's on, there was no doubt, you know, that this wasn't Kobe Bryant in his last game here or anything like that. That was a 99.9% pro Pacers, pro Paul George crowd, and I think he saw that, which I agree. It makes that moment maybe even mean just a little bit more because I think Paul and Gordon Hayward really respect each other. They're two really good players. They were both picked right next to each other, but neither had any sort of aggressiveness. There was no trash talking. It was two really good players going at it. Hayward probably playing better for the four quarters, but Paul playing better in those final moments when it was most necessary. And so, no, I thought it was a really good battle between two really good guys, and Paul George ends up getting the last laugh. And I don't think those comments were, you know, provoked at all. I thought that was just raw emotion from Paul George, understanding there's a local guy there. But the crowd was very pro-Pacers, pro-Paul George. And I thought I thought that moment in itself, you know, I know you obviously experienced this as well. We get these guys in a walk-off interview coming off the court. It's the interview you see on TV if you're listening in the radio. Those interviews come like a minute after the game ends, sometimes even less, like 30 seconds after the game ends. We're grabbing a guy. And oftentimes in those moments, you get a much better interview than we'll get in the locker room 15 minutes later, because those guys are still in the moment and they haven't had a chance, you know, to sit down and let the adrenaline come back to earth. And I think that's kind of what you saw from Paul George there at the end. When you heard him in the locker room, he had a chance, you know, for it to come back down to earth. And I think he might have, in that stretch, said a word in there that he might have been worried about repeating in the locker room. But you get him in those moments like we get him off the court and late in those games like that. And I think those are... I think those are really showing moments of what's going through those guys' heads.
Well, that's the question I guess I have for you, because, you know, at the time I picked the walk-off interview based on how the game was going, I thought Jeff Teague was sort of my choice. And so we interviewed Jeff Teague for the Fox Sports Indiana broadcast, but you had Paul George on the radio. So the question I guess for you is, were you aware of what he had said and his emotion after he hit that shot? And what was he like in that radio walk-off interview compared to what we saw on television 15, 20 minutes later?
Yeah, he was a little more emotional, and I thought he was pretty good on TV. You know, typically when we get him in the locker room, we have first rights, so that's why when you toss it to me, we get an interview where I'm able to just ask the questions. But if we're talking to somebody else, in this case we were talking to Miles Turner when Paul came out, it's a scrum, and you hear questions coming from a bunch of different areas. And I thought Paul was pretty good in that scenario, but undoubtedly, those guys tend to be better when you get them right off the court. I had seen a few people on Twitter, and I'm still not sure if I handled this exactly how I would have liked to handle it, because everything was happening so quick. But I had seen a few people on Twitter post that Paul George said, you know, quotes, "This is my city." But I wasn't watching the TV broadcast, and his back was to me personally, so I didn't see it. So I didn't feel 100% comfortable specifically asking him on that, because I'm going through my head and I'm thinking, you know, if I ask him about saying "this is my city" and he didn't say that, and I'm going off of Twitter,
right,
that might be tough to explain, you know, if the situation went poorly. But I did ask him about his general emotions in those moments, and I asked him, you know, "You seemed about as fired up as we've ever seen you. What were you thinking?" And, you know, he alluded to, it's a big game. It's against an opponent who's really good. Gordon Hayward, a really good, a tough guy to go against. And, you know, he had a lot of adrenaline, a lot of emotion built up. So I didn't ask him specifically on that quote, but I did ask him about that moment. And you could tell it really meant a lot to him, not only to hit the game-winning shot, but to do it, you know, over a player who is good, is you know, moving up to perhaps close to Paul George level. And those guys are extremely competitive when they hit shots like that against those guys. And maybe even toss in the fact that, yeah, he's from Indianapolis. I think all of those things boiled up into one of the more interesting moments of the season.
Yeah, all in all, it was a good win. It was a win the team needed. You'd like to have thought that after that Knicks loss a week and a half ago, I believe we taped a podcast prior to that, so this will be our first time on the air. Do we say on the air in podcast world?
I don't know. Good question. Is it on the air?
Does
on the air require live? I guess that's the question.
Well, that's true, too, so that would not be accurate. I'm guessing that it is not on the air, because the airwaves, I believe, are a radio term. But regardless, after that Knicks loss, they had quote-unquote a team meeting on the airplane, and then came back and played well against the Hornets. But really, maybe that three-day break, that maybe that was the one time this season where you would not have wanted that break, because everything that worked well on Wednesday, you almost had a chance to hit the reset button when you didn't want to. And you go to Toronto, and I'll be honest, when I saw that Raptors game, when I sat down to watch it, and I just felt like I saw, you know, I'd been reading up on how Toronto had been playing, and there seemed to be A little bit of uneasiness in Toronto about the Raptors and what they've done over the last couple of weeks. I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity. This is a chance to get a good road win. And I said at the time to Chrissy Myers, who I was sitting next to from Pacers PR, I said, who would be a good first-round matchup to you? I said, I think the Raptors would be good. And, you know, our discussion was kind of like, well, we'll see what happens. By halftime, I said, yeah, I'm not so sure about that anymore. They played like that team that had the second best record in the Eastern Conference last year. I mean, they were fired up. They were aggressive. And really, the Pacers didn't start that game poorly, in my opinion. They were playing well, but they were just being outplayed. And then, as so often happens on the road, when they fall behind or when they hit a rough patch, things started to snowball a little bit. So, not necessarily didn't mean to go back two or three games, but when you're asking about, you know, what you saw last night, I wanted to get that into context and say, I think that they still have a chance. If you take that Toronto game out of the mix, I think they have a chance to put something together, and I think it's very important to do so. 12 to go, team 7 and 8, 9, they want to be in the playoffs as well. I think the Pacers have a really good chance, if they have a good week coming up, to get into that fifth spot, because Atlanta is really reeling. It's going to be a tough game at Boston tomorrow, but then the next three are at home. So you may win three, you may win two, but you may win tomorrow. Win three of the next four, see what happens with the Hawks, and I think you're in a really good position. But last night was definitely key.
Yeah, I want to touch on one thing you said and then go back to a point you just made. That meeting on the plane, I think, you know, we talked a lot about it, and then when they didn't play well in Toronto, then there was, okay, maybe it didn't mean anything. Well, I do think it's possible for both to be true. I think it's possible for that meeting, that players-only meeting that they had, to be a really good thing going forward, but it didn't show it one game in Toronto. Now, you know, Nate McMillan was extremely disappointed after that game, you know, probably just watching him on video, top six, seven, maybe we've seen him most frustrated after a loss.
Yeah, just
I think it's possible.
To that point, when he was talking on that post-game media availability, I was standing next to Quinn Buckner, and he said to me, he's mad, he's upset, he's frustrated. And, you know, there have been a couple times where, you know, like I said, I don't think that Raptors game would go down as like one of the bad losses of the season. But I think given the circumstances and the sense of urgency that Nate so often says, and to not have that fight against a team that was playing well, but to not be able to fight back, I think that was really frustrating to him. So that's what also made the Jazz game important. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I think those are good points. And I think we're still waiting for that turn the corner moment this season. And I understand, you know, why fans might be frustrated that, you know, here we are 70 games in and they had a 7-game winning streak, but it followed up with a 6-game losing streak. I still personally think that team meeting could help be a turn the page moment, even if it hasn't happened yet. They're certainly going to have to figure out how to improve their play on the road. And we'll get more specific into Boston in a minute. But I wanted to go back to your point talking about the fifth seed. And this is a question we've gotten a lot on Twitter and seen a lot of people discuss. We, and myself especially personally, have had so much focus on where the Pacers are in relation to the teams behind them trying to catch them. They're close. So far, no one's been able to do it. Right now, as of taping Tuesday night, Milwaukee is a game and a half behind Indiana. They're in seventh. The Pistons are two games behind Indiana in eighth. Tied with the Pistons for eighth is Miami. And then Chicago right now is three games behind the Pacers. And we've done so much focus on, okay, can those guys, can the Pacers keep them at an arm's length? Well, all of a sudden, Atlanta's lost four in a row, and you move the focus upward, and you're only a game behind them. And these two teams play right at the end of the season, and that will also determine the tiebreaker. So that game's going to be worth 1.5 games, if you will. So it's not unfair at all to say, can the Pacers move up? A question we've gotten, and one I'll throw in your direction, it's very hypothetical at this point because seeds are not determined, and in fact, right now Toronto is only a game behind Washington, and a lot of it depends on who you think the Pacers match up better with, but a question we've seen a lot is moving up to the fifth seed worth it? And I'd be interested in your take.
You know, I was actually talking to my son this morning about that a little bit, and I don't know that the fifth or the sixth really is a big deal either way, other than, you know, it looks better to be in that 4-5 game. You're in the, you know, top half, even though that's not technically correct, but to play in that 4-5 game, and I think more importantly than that, you're not going to pick your opponent. You're not going to pick your matchup. It's not like the NFL where sometimes teams sit there, and I guess the good teams maybe, or the top few teams in the NBA, occasionally they'll find a team they want to play. I think a year or two ago, the Grizzlies were reeling a little bit, and teams saw them as a fading, you know, 6 seed or 7 seed, and they might be a better opponent than who was in front of them or just behind them. But I don't think it's a big deal either way. I'm not sure if you look at the most likely matchups, Boston, Washington, Toronto. I'd say we'll know more about Toronto after the next couple of games because there's still two more matchups against the Raptors. And while it did not go well on Sunday, I still think the Pacers can match up with them. But we've seen Jonas Valanciunas be a problem and be a pest for the Pacers. And so I guess initially, maybe I say now, maybe that would not be the best matchup. But I think that it doesn't really matter 5 or 6. I don't think you want to get into 7, and obviously you don't want to get into 8. If 7 happens, it's fine. But when you look at the schedule next week after that 3-game homestand, which starts on Friday, it's a difficult 3-game road trip. And that road trip is at Memphis on the second half of a back-to-back, at Toronto, and at Cleveland. So that's going to be difficult. The team's road struggles are well documented. We will see if any of those teams are, quote-unquote, resting in any of those games. So maybe those games become either a little easier or more challenging, depending on what they've done in the games previously. So it's too late to go for 4. It's too late to get home court advantage in the East. You just want to make sure that now that you're in and you get the best seed you can. So I think 5 would be the best, but I think if you're 6, you just, you know, you take that as a challenge, and you think that with a playoff series, without back-to-backs, with some playoff pedigree and experience that you have on this team, I guess Paul with the most, and then you've got some other guys with different times that have had some, but even last year in a 7-game series, a lot of these guys that were on that team last year, that will help them this time around. I think you go into that series thinking you've got a shot, but they've still got the good news. They have 12 games left, and there are still things they're working on, and consistency, they still have some things to fine-tune in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I hear you. I had it was at Indy Sirs who was asking that earlier today. What's the advantage to moving up to 5? And, of course, they're looking if you can win a first-round series from an upset position, then, you know, you're looking at Cleveland in the second round most likely. To me, the answer, though, is you would rather, I think, most importantly, object number one for the Pacers is to head into the playoffs playing well. And if that means you're playing well and you jump Atlanta while playing well, then that's probably best case scenario. If you're playing well and Atlanta plays a little bit better, then you look at the 3-6 and you say, okay, you know, maybe you could compete in that first round. And if you have a surprise win, you also don't have to face Cleveland round two. But the matchup thing is so tough to do because even right now, a couple of days ago, we were talking about Washington passing Boston for the 2 seed. Well, now Toronto's only a game behind Washington. Washington's lost a couple in a row. So those pieces can change. I think ultimately the team just has to try to win as many games going forward and then look at the situation. But I understand why fans ask that and why you might think, you know, 6, you stay away from Cleveland's half of the bracket. You're 4 or 5 versus 6. It's a road playoff series either way. I understand the line of thinking. I just think, and I think similar to what you were saying, you want to be playing your best going into this stretch. And if that means you play well and pass Atlanta, then good. You know, you want to be playing your best basketball going in. And right now the Pacers are trying to find how to do that. They've alternated wins and losses for a franchise record 14 straight times. And we'll see. Boston certainly will be tough coming up on Wednesday, but as you mentioned, some home games coming up after that, and we'll see if they can put together a streak or at least get this pesky win-loss thing out of the way.
If you keep it going, just win game one of that playoff series every time, and you're going to go all the way.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Wheat Hotchkiss, who writes for Pacers.com and helps manage the digital side, brought up how ridiculous would it have to be to go win-loss, win-loss the rest of the way. And unfortunately, if they go win-loss, win-loss the rest of the way, They would end up losing game one of the playoffs, and then obviously wouldn't be the right step. So they can't do it the rest of the season and then win a playoff series, unfortunately. But
I'm going to say the streak ends at some point in the next week or so.
Yeah, I think so too. Philadelphia coming up. You've got three home games. The Pacers playing extremely well at home. You would like to see it end sooner rather than later. Let's move to our pick three. You're obviously in Boston. I'm here in downtown Indianapolis right by the field house where just because the Pacers weren't playing there, the building and the workers were even more busy than a typical Pacers weekend. I know you were there with some of the college games going on as well. I forget, which games were you in attendance for?
So I actually purchased tickets to the Friday afternoon session. It was just, you know, one of the things that I've referenced on this podcast, when the schedule comes out, there are always, you know, a few different dates that I kind of look and say, you know, is there a game at this point? Where are we going to be when this is happening? Where are we on the road? And it's, you know, things like Christmas, obviously, and New Year's and Halloween now with the kids wanting to know if we're planning on Halloween. And one of the other ones I kind of keep an eye on is during that first and second round of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, obviously you're a sports fan, Pat. We now are basically primarily professional basketball reporters, but we are still into college basketball. And I love watching the first and second round. And it was amazing that the schedule came out. And knowing that there was first and second round action in Indianapolis, I just assumed that would be a weekend road trip. But it was crazy to have that game on Wednesday at home against Charlotte. And then leave the set, and really basically when I walked out of the Fox Loft or down the stairs, immediately seeing the crew turning that building into a college basketball venue. And credit to all the facilities folks on Wednesday night and to Thursday morning getting that ready to go for those teams, because Thursday you had all eight teams having open 50-minute practice sessions at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And so you open that building up not just to the teams to practice, but also to the fans. And think about the media contingent that you had in Indianapolis because of Louisville and Kentucky both being in that pod for the first and second round and having worked for just 15 months. But I did start my television career in Kentucky. I know how passionate the fans are down there. And I know the Louisville TV market a little bit. They cover Louisville and Kentucky pretty well. The Lexington market, they pretty much stick to the true blue coverage and covering Kentucky, and they don't care much about Louisville. But you had the Louisville, you had the Kentucky media members as well. There were so many details of things that had to be done. Even think about the concession stands. NCAA tournament action, you have to have a different menu, no alcohol, different things that have to fit in line with the NCAA. The venue, you had to cover up some of the signage. The Pacers sponsors are not necessarily the same as the NCAA sponsors. So many things had to be done between the time that Hornets game ended and basically first thing Thursday morning. And then it was basically nonstop until Sunday. And I think the facilities crew was probably happy that those games on Sunday started at noon so they could get them out of there by, you know, 6 o'clock or so instead of waiting till one of the venues. There was a game almost till 11 o'clock on Sunday night. So they got to then turn that back around, had it ready to go, looking like an NBA arena on Monday. So great job by the security folks, the ushers, the facilities crew, and also some of the guys we work with sometimes in the in-house video department. Word did a great job with the big screen all weekend long. So credit to all those guys and gals that did a great job all weekend.
Yeah, it's really amazing when you think about all that has to go into something like this. And it's a basketball venue, and yeah, it's basketball games, but everything is so different in this scenario. And one thing I didn't have an appreciation for, but I certainly did during the tournament, was, you know, they've got two games that play on that first, for here in Indianapolis, the games, the first round games on Friday. They've got two games and then an hour break before they reopen the doors for two more games. So you don't just have one game worth of people in there. And I know you buy a ticket or whatever, but you've got people coming in and out. You have two games worth of people in the building, and then you've only got an hour to get it ready for two more games worth of people. And they reached out and asked some of us, you know, they've got a bunch of people that they have helping to turn the building over, but they asked and reached out, you know, to some of the employees, hey, if you're free Friday after 5, we can use as many hands on deck as we can have. And I was free and was more than happy to help. And we had an hour to help the people that they had hired in to turn that building over. And it's amazing all that has to change in an hour, from cleaning the suites out to getting every, because think about it, you put down a lot of money for a suite. Well, there were people in it for like 4 or 5 hours previously. And then all of a sudden, you've got an hour. And then if you paid for a suite for the second session, you expect that thing to be in pristine condition and with people coming in with food and beverages and all of that. So that is something that was so eye-opening to me. And I played such a small role in it. It was just helping, you know, the regular people that know what they're doing, unlike myself. But it was really eye-opening to see, wow, you know, every venue in the U.S. right now who's hosting one of these tournaments has two games of crazy people coming in, rooting for their team, spilling popcorn, spilling drinks, leaving rosters and all that stuff. And then they get 60 minutes to get it ready and get it sparkling new. And you know, you mentioned it there, hats off to our facilities team and the people that help turn the arena over and do all that constantly for concerts and everything that comes to the field house, Disney on Ice. But it was really on full display, I thought, this past weekend with the tournament. I know you there personally watching it can attest to that. So that leads us into our pick three of top moments of the first two. We're still calling that first round's called the first round again, right?
Like the it's changed. I did catch myself last week when talking about it, wondering whether I had, was attending a first or a second round game. But it's the first four and then the first round. So first and second round games are in the books. And yes, your question is top three moments or pick three moments of the weekend?
Right, pick three moments. So mine personally was the moment that I enjoyed the most, and it was a set of moments. I'm not one of those Duke haters. I like Duke, especially from an NCAA or an NBA perspective, because they bring in so many talented kids, and I like watching some of the guys who are projected to go high in the draft and watching them. So from that aspect, I like the Dukes and the Kentuckys because they've always got interesting guys that are going to come to the NBA and watch. So I find myself watching them a lot, not necessarily rooting for the programs, but enjoying watching the supreme talent that come in and out of their schools. I've got a good buddy who works for the University of South Carolina. I briefly had some interaction with the athletic department there at South Carolina. It's such a first-class operation. And one thing that I like about the tournament is you get these scenarios where you've got Duke, who has all these guys who are freshmen and they're, you know, 19 years old, some of them still 18 years old. They're extremely talented, but they're young. And then you get a team like South Carolina, who's not flashy, but you know, they've got one really good player, Sindarius Thornwell, and a couple others that have been with the program for 4 years. And no, they're not going to be the third pick in the NBA draft, but they've been in college for 4 years. It's a 22-year-old versus an 18-year-old sometimes. And I like seeing that dynamic. And watching South Carolina beat Duke wasn't so much a, oh, the Dukies go down moment. I didn't really care about that. Some people, of course, you know, like for the big programs to go down. But I just loved watching the dynamic of a really good senior guard who had played 4 years for South Carolina and Thornwell have the advantage over some of the freshmen that'll be all over the NBA, and I think Thornwell will too. But I really like that moment watching South Carolina. You know, that program under Frank Martin has slowly built its way up, but they've been waiting, you know, 3, 4, 5 years and even longer. I think it's their first Sweet 16 appearance, I think I heard, in program history. They've been waiting a long time for a moment like this. And so to see something like that get fulfilled, I always find enjoyable.
I think, and I'll check this real quickly, I think it was South Carolina's first tournament win, not just Sweet 16, first tournament win in school history. I could be wrong on that, but I thought I saw that tonight. But yeah, crazy. And that was one of those, okay, first tournament win since 1973. So not quite ever, but okay. 44 years is quite a long time. And that was was unique for us because on Sunday night, that game and the UCLA game were the two games that had not finished when we went into the air and took off, leaving Toronto to land in Indianapolis. And of course, when the plane lands and the phone gets turned back on and you fire it up, the first thing I see is that Duke lost. So that was certainly a surprise. UCLA was in a competitive game, but they were able to pull away against Cincinnati. My moment is going to be from the night before, and I guess I probably got a good runner-up choice as well. I referenced going to the games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but I was watching, I was looking forward to Saturday night, and this is one of the challenges of being in Toronto is no True TV, no TBS, no TNT. they really had the CBS affiliate from Buffalo, where you could get whatever action was on CBS, and then they had the TSN channels, which if you're familiar at all with Toronto sports, that's basically their version of ESPN, and they have their own sports center at some time. But it was like ESPN used to do the tournament, where they had a crew and they bounced around to different games, and so they were kind of showing whichever game was best. But it bothered me because I couldn't get the Butler game, so I went somewhere to try to find a place to get a bite to eat and watch the Butler game. And they had two TSN channels, but I still couldn't really find what I wanted, except they finally turned to the Butler game. Then with about 4 minutes to go, when they were up 8-10, they turned off of it. So I was a little frustrated. I didn't have any memorable moment watching Butler except checking the scores on the phone and watching a little bit of the game. But went back to my room and was able to watch that Purdue game. And I tell you what, that was a pretty awesome second half to watch. You know, first really whole game to see Purdue build that big lead. And then when you see Iowa State get all the momentum, it felt like just watching on television. Iowa State had a home crowd in Milwaukee. And when they took the lead with 3 or 4 minutes to go, that's usually a situation where the team that was behind that gets the lead, they go on to win that game. And I'll give credit to PJ Thompson, maybe not one of the most talked about members of a Big Ten championship team, but the Brebeuf star, the son of LaSalle Thompson, the former Pacer, hit a three-pointer that bounced around and went in and got Purdue back to the lead, and then hit a couple of key free throws as well. And I was really happy. If my dad's listening, I guess I'll apologize in advance for saying I was happy for Purdue, because he's kind of one of those IU guys that still may not necessarily pull for the Boilers, but at this point I'm a little bit college neutral in that case. And I'm a Matt Painter fan, and I respect the Boilers, and I respect, you know, PJ and guys like that on that team. So I was happy for him. I was kind of happy to see them get that win. And that was a big shot when, basically, if that doesn't happen, I don't know that Purdue wins that game. So that's going to be my moment in the pick three.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I grew up, my dad went to IU. I grew up an IU fan, but as choosing Ball State, I'm sure did some to you. Kind of made me a little bit more neutral. I love watching this Purdue team. I've enjoyed Butler for their extended run. Probably not going to happen, but you know, a good weekend for both of those guys, and they could be meeting up. Where's the Final Four in Glendale? I mean, Purdue would have to beat Kansas, and Butler would have to beat UNC.
How cool would that be? Yeah, really, if we saw a national semifinal Purdue Butler, that'd be awesome.
And it's not totally mind-boggling to think it could happen. Butler always plays well against good teams, and Purdue is such a mismatch with their bigs that teams don't usually see. It wouldn't totally blow my mind. Our combined pick, like a memory of a goldfish here. What did we pick? Michigan?
Yeah, I think let's go to that Michigan game, because that was one I was watching at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I think you might have been actually doing your job and working and maybe going to practice that afternoon. Was that correct?
Doing my job with air quotes. Yeah, there was a practice
before you stocked the suites a little bit later in the day. You were doing interviews
There was a practice, and I'll give credit, you know, to PS&E, Pacer Sports Entertainment. They do a really good job of during the tournament, letting us, you know, if we have some free time in the office, there's TVs on in there, the games are on. They stack the office with some snacks, so really good employee morale kind of things that PS&E puts together for the tournament. So I was only like about 100 feet from you for that game, but I had it on a screen, and yeah, it was well, Michigan had two fantastic games in Indianapolis. They're probably wishing the whole tournament was here, but yeah, that was one of, if not the best game probably of the opening week.
I think, right? I think the score was tied at 64 with about 12 minutes to play, and it just kind of felt like it could have been anybody's game, and Michigan in about a three minute or four minute stretch hit 4 3-pointers, and I was really impressed with their, you know, competitiveness, their shot making, and they were getting out rebound, and that's one thing to kind of keep an eye on with Michigan. And that's what I worried about Michigan and being able to beat Louisville, is that Michigan got killed on the glass. Oklahoma State had so many offensive rebounds, and I thought Louisville might be able to do the same. And so that's just something to keep an eye on. If Michigan, you know, I don't know that Oregon will be able to do that to them. So maybe they're in a bracket where you could see them face Purdue, and that'd be awesome in the Elite Eight. So I'll say Michigan's win against Oklahoma State. And then also I watched Michigan and Louisville a little bit on Sunday before going to the Pacers-Raptors game. So Michigan's weekend can be our combined pick three.
close out the tournament talk here. We'll get moving forward on the Pacers' next couple opponents. For those of you who don't really watch much college basketball but may have an eye on it for the NBA, there's a matchup that's going to play coming up, UCLA and Kentucky. You're talking Lonzo Ball, which everybody knows who he is at this point for. They should know him because he's a fantastic basketball player. They know him because his dad, they should take the microphones away from his dad.
Yeah, exactly.
But on on the Kentucky side, De'Aaron Fox. These are two point guards that might go top five in this draft. So you are seeing two of the very best going on at point guard. That's, for me, the most intriguing matchup, besides the obvious sides, Butler and Purdue. But in terms of an NBA look at this Sweet 16, UCLA and Kentucky, that matchup of two really good lottery, high lottery point guards. We'll see how it all comes out once we get to the draft, but that'll be really interesting to watch. You are in Boston. The Pacers are getting ready to take on the Celtics, and obviously this will be a tough one. Celtics are second in the East. They've really taken off. If you look at them, oh, about December on, I think, off the top of my head, I bet the record is even better than it looks right now because they got off to about a 500 start the first few weeks in. They're playing as one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Isaiah Thomas is making a case for being high up there in the MVP chase, and they're pretty well rounded all the way through their head coach.
Yeah, 45-26, and you know, for all the talk about not wanting to be the eighth seed and have to play Cleveland, you know, it would not surprise me if somehow Boston jumped up there and grabbed the top seed. I think that's something that the Cavs can say it's not as big a deal to them, although I think they would really prefer to be the number one seed. Boston, I think, for them to go into a series and think they've got a really good shot against Cleveland, I think maybe they would like to have that home court advantage. So no resting from the Celtics on Wednesday. Everybody's healthy. Isaiah Thomas had been injured a little bit over the weekend, but he came back to play last night against Washington. I think, you know, Boston's for sure a top two team in the East. I don't see any way after what happened last night that Washington can catch them, and 6-4 in their last 10. They're 24-9 at home. And think about this, the Pacers only have 10 home losses this season, two of them against the Celtics. I think this is going to be a close game. I think back to last season, I think all the games were very close, and I think it'll be the same when the Pacers play the Celtics. So I'm looking forward to that matchup. Always one of my favorite places to go on the road in the NBA. Obviously some Indiana connections as well with the Celtics. How cool is it this week of the Sweet 16 and the IHSA State Finals coming up this weekend that you had a game against the Jazz with their local flavor and then a game against the Celtics and the unique Indiana ties to that team as well. So really looking forward to Pacers and Celtics before starting that three-game homestand. I do have to ask you a couple questions. I did ask the fans on Twitter if they wanted me to ask any questions of you on this podcast, and we did get a couple responses. So we'll first go with Corey Clark, WZIS underscore Corey Clark on Twitter. He says, who wins in basketball, Jeremiah or Pat? Would you like to answer that one?
have we talked? I feel like we might have gotten asked this question before.
You probably didn't bring it up. You probably were asked and decided to keep it out of the podcast.
Yeah, that's probably it. You at least, I think, keep a pretty good fitness regimen on the road. And that's something, like, you do it better, you're better at it than I am, and you are traveling and I'm not. I live in an apartment with a treadmill like 45 seconds away, and I really struggle during the season to stay in some sort of physical shape. So, I don't know, I was a pretty good basketball player growing up, but nothing great. Both of my brothers got the athletic gene more than I did. So
you got the voice.
I will give it to you. Yeah, hey, I'm the only one of the three still in basketball, so
yeah,
I'll take how it turned out.
Well, Jonathan Bender is having his one-on-one league, and we have an entry. I like my chances, although my knee's been a little gimpy, and I've had to go from the treadmill to the stair climber, so I'm not sure how good I would be, so I guess we'll just to be determined, Corey, on that one, and I guess I'll get Derek Schultz from our friends at 97.5 1260 ask Pat if he thinks the Cubs will repeat. Would you like to spend any time on that one?
Thanks, Derek. No, I would not like to spend any time on that one. And no, I do not think I do not think the Cubs will repeat because the Cardinals are obviously going to win the World Series.
Ray Lucas asks, what's your favorite Mark Boyle moment? And do you also marvel at the wealth of information Mark Monteith brings? Absolutely. On the second one, there are many Mark Boyle moments. I wanted to reference something on Mark Monteith just a little bit. Just, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had a nice memory from Slick Leonard, who was recalling the first time the Pacers played the Knicks, and it wasn't a regular game. It was an exhibition game. And, you know, there were a couple of details that were maybe off on a day or two and maybe not exactly exactly as Slick said them. I think the general point was accurate, but Mark sent us an email to just, you know, he's the historian on Pacers basketball, and he updated the situation, told us what the stats were and what the correct information was. Once again, Slick has a wealth of knowledge as well, and he's think about how many games he's seen and what he's seen. He had a funny story to tell about that very first Pacers-Knicks exhibition game, but it's good we have Mark Monteith to make sure we're all in line a little bit. What's your favorite Mark Boyle moment there, Pat?
That's so tough off the top
of my head. You can postpone it to a future podcast. Maybe that could be a pick three down the road. Because I know you'd like to give Mark Boyle his, you know, you want to give him his full glory. And I would like to as well. So we should probably wait for that.
it's tough to try to think of just one. But yeah, so give me a week. We will, Ray, we will get back to the favorite Mark Boyle moment, because there are so many, and we would just be sitting here in silence for 15 minutes while I tried to pare them down. So, but hey, how about this? We actually got a good amount of questions this
week. And one more from Benny. Ben just jamming 13. Oh. Thanks for your question, Benny. He says, chances Hayward comes here. He says, LOL. So, you know, as I think we've said many times in our radio interviews and on Twitter and on our broadcast, we are not, we don't speak for the team. We're not really in the front office meetings and don't necessarily have any idea about moves and free agency. We can be just speculating at different times. I have no idea what Gordon Hayward is thinking. I think it will be fascinating. I guess the only thing that I would say about the situation, if I had to say this summer, the most likely scenario would probably be, given how Utah is playing, you know, I think it's probably likely maybe he would sign with Utah, or maybe even do a shorter deal with Utah just to see how they have for the next year or two. And then I'd say Celtics and Pacers would be right there as well if both teams have the cap space and the interest. So I could say next season, Gordon Hayward, maybe Pacers, maybe Jazz, maybe Celtics, but no inside information and no idea on the chances.
Yeah, it's tough to know. The only thing I know is he's going to get a lot of money.
Exactly.
He is putting together, I mean, he's putting together Paul George numbers this season. And he had always kind of been in that, you know, ladder below Paul of really good, but not, you know, quite to the all-star level. Well, he's brought his level up this year. He's, wherever he goes, he's going to get a very nice paycheck that goes with it. But yeah, Who knows? I would assume he likes Utah, and we'll see what happens. That's down the line, and I think a lot of questions have to be answered that some of them will be in the playoffs. So, yeah, tough to know that now, and that's definitely not our specific area of where we would suggest anything in that regard. But, yeah, I know it makes a lot of sense. It's a local name, and all those guys tend to come around at some point. You know, what about those guys playing locally? And he's one of them, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It will. Anything else, Pat? We're about 45 minutes in. Good time for this podcast.
Yeah, it was good to talk to you. We'll see. So Boston is 7:30, I think, correct? So you will start over there at 7 Eastern time. Do I have that right?
7 o'clock for Indiana Members Credit Union Pacers Live pregame. And, you know, with that three-game homestand coming up, I'll see what I can do. You know, we have you do some interviews for us on the pregame. But I think that, you know, we need to make sure we have a strong finish to the season ratings-wise. And so I'm gonna talk with Ken Softman and see if there's any way in your busy pregame schedule that we can get you in the Fox Loft for one of those upcoming home games.
Oh, you know I love that. I just sit there begging Ken every single game. Ken, can I please come on this week? And Ken's always like,
it's
no,
only been like
no,
twice, so he keeps shutting you down.
No, I'm joking. Okay. But obviously, I always enjoy the time when we can talk up there and not do it in a podcast.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe, you know what we need to do is promote the podcast.
Talk for 45 minutes.
Promote the podcast on the television show. Get you know, I know we've got a loyal following, but we got to, you know, I think we got to branch out a little bit.
They won't let us talk for 45 minutes on that, though, right?
I don't think so. Now, if we wanted to do this on Eddie White's Pacers overtime, I think we could probably talk as long as you'd like, because there are nights that I finish a long post-game show on television, sit at my desk for another 15 or 20 minutes, talk to someone on my way out, and get in my car, and there are still two segments left in that show. So I think we could probably do that show pretty easily as well some night if Eddie wanted to go smoke a cigar or something.
Yeah, Eddie White is the master of the spoken word.
It does have a lot of commercials, so it's not just him talking, because I get to hear you talk as the spokesman of so many companies around Indiana as well. So it's always good to listen to on my way home.
All right, well, appreciate you joining us from Boston, and that got a little sideways at the end, but it was enjoyable.
I'm off to get some Dunkin' Donuts and look for Tom Brady's jersey.
Let us know. Hey, if you find it, don't steal it. The FBI will get it.
Exactly. My fingerprints will not be on it.
All right. Jeremiah Johnson out in Boston. I'm Pat Boyle. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.